This week's episode of Still Untitled is brought to you by Google's Cloud Platform. Looking to move to the cloud? Check out the Google Cloud Platform weekly podcast, where Google developer advocates answer questions, get in the weeds, and talk to experts, customers, and partners about GCP. Learn more and subscribe to the podcast by going to g.co/GCP podcast. Once again, that's g.co/GCP podcast. And now on with the show.
Welcome to Still Untitled, the Adam Savage Project. I'm Will.
I'm Adam.
And I'm Norm.
My voice broke at the end after all that buildup. That was terrible.
Well, when it's time to change.
How are you gentlemen doing this week?
I'm cold.
I'm cold as hell.
You guys are wearing t-shirts. You're maniacs. I have a warm cap in my jacket pocket.
We can't talk about
just in case. Look,
it's not really cold. Yeah,
San Francisco.
San Francisco. It's in the 40s, and everyone's losing their minds.
I saw a little tiny bit of frost in my backyard this morning.
Well, you're down there, so it's colder even.
I saw one of my friends in Chicago posted a picture of like 6 inches or 12 inches of snow on top of her car this morning.
It's not real. It's not real cold.
It's only cold because our houses aren't built very well.
By the same token, when I was visiting, when we were down in New Zealand, in Wellington, the week we were there, they were having a heat wave, and it was as high as 80 degrees Fahrenheit. Just what, like 34 Celsius? I can't quite remember.
98.6 is 20 degrees is room temperature, 70 degrees. 20 degrees Celsius is 70 degrees Fahrenheit.
Well, at any rate, it was like 80 degrees Fahrenheit, and everyone in Wellington was losing their minds. And they were like apologizing. We're really sorry for this crazy debilitating heat. And I'm like, that is so cute that you guys think this is debilitating heat.
There was a point last summer here one time when it was 111 degrees when I got in the car, and my office was 96 degrees Fahrenheit inside with the fan blowing.
Yes.
I was like, this is 80 is totally tolerable and very comfortable even.
Completely.
Yeah.
So this isn't real cold, just as 80 degrees isn't real hot.
No.
You know what's real hot? The thing you're holding right now in your hand.
Yes.
That's a hot shite.
Well, king of the transitions.
Yeah.
Norm Chan.
You know, this is the reason you gotta watch the video, or if you're just listening to the podcast, you'll get the tested video in like a couple days. But something arrived at the cave today, and we had to shoot a video about it.
We did.
Not because it was a build. It's something you had already built, but because you knew that you could not contain the excitement, and
truly,
we needed to capture it on camera.
And so we did. So many times on the podcast before, if you watch the podcast, as I think most people do.
Yeah.
I actually don't know.
It was a 50-50 split back in the day.
Well, but if you watch the podcast, you see behind me frequently, or in the thumbnail, you'll see behind us frequently Apollo A7L suit made by Ryan Nagata with some parts contributed by me. But it's Ryan's amazing, incredible, beautiful work, including couplers like this, which is cast resin, but it looks really metallic, and it's got weathering in the corners, and it's just his work is top-notch.
And you talked about how he had gotten some of the effect by treating the mold before he poured his resin.
Yes, really? He actually paints his metallic paint into the silicone mold first and then pours a colored resin behind it.
Wow.
In order to get a really like a deep blue that when it scratches doesn't start to look like something else.
So what is the original connector part made of?
The real one?
Yes.
They're aluminum.
Aluminum, okay.
Yeah, they're aluminum. And I don't actually even really understand quite how they function. I know there's like three buttons, and they're made to work so that someone in an astronaut glove can activate it.
Okay.
And I decided after looking at the A7L suit that I wanted real aluminum connectors. So I made them.
Wow.
And here is one of them. And here's the thing. I sent it out to be anodized, and this is the first time I've been machining stuff for like 25 years, but this is the first time I've ever sent something to an anodizer to be really for real anodized, and it's so much fun.
It's so cool.
Oh my God, I'm like super, super psyched about this.
What is that process of anodizing aluminum?
It's like electroplating, isn't it? You put it in an acid bath with a...
It's not a dimensional... Electroplating is a dimensional process where a coating gets added. Anodizing is... it might add microns, but it effectively doesn't add any dimension to the parts. it is an acid bath that opens up the outside, and then what you're carefully doing with anodizing is oxidizing the outer layer.
Oh, okay.
And because aluminum oxide is one of the hardest substances on the planet, this is why camera equipment, when it's black and aluminum, still doesn't scratch like aluminum does, because it's been coated with a super hard coating. And when you're doing that coating, you can introduce a dye to the process, and that dye will dictate the color of the part, which is why you see so many different colors of anodization.
Yeah.
So, you know, this was a company that has like five different colors. They do red, blue, gold, silver, et cetera.
It turns out you needed the red, blue, and the gold.
I needed the red, blue, and the gold. And so, yeah, I made one extra of these. I actually started by making two extra couplers, messed one up in the middle. So I ended up with enough for a suit plus an extra that I could practice weathering on. And we shot a video of me opening this box for the first time.
You can't see it in the video right now, and you will see it in the future video, but the complexity of these couplers as something to machine was something of a education for you.
I have, again, not machined. This is the first time I've sent something out. It's also the first time I've done something that required so many operations. Like, for instance, on this little part here, this is the flange. Now, this is a pretty straightforward part. It's got six holes around its perimeter. It's got a little shoulder. I had to machine for the lathe a rounded edge lathing bit to make that radius exactly right.
On the inner edge
right
of
there.
The flange, yeah.
And then I had to countersink these holes. I also had to, this one was done in a single operation. So I was able to drill the center hole, mill it to the, lathe it to the correct depth, cut it, and then do this. And then I had to hold it in a dividing head on my mill to drill the holes in each of them. So this is a multiple step operation where I'm doing each part one step at a time.
Yeah.
Then these guys got turned down. Then they got chucked in and these notches got made. Then these notches got made. Then turned on its side. Then these notches got made. Then it had to be remounted from the backside. So I had to make a tool. I had to machine a tool for holding the parts so that I could machine them.
And every additional one requires just as much mark.
Yeah. I did six and a half of these connectors.
Wow.
And it took me about 12 hours of machining. I mean, it'd probably take a real machinist a fraction of that.
But you were making a set for you, and you were making a set for Ryan. So,
Just a set for me. Ryan can go to hell.
Did you think about
Ryan has already made himself a set, and neither of us is a professional machinist, so it's not like we could take the. I figured, like at some point there might be machined runs of parts. Like he's making more suits, and I'd love to get in on that, and he knows that. But as far as making parts like this,
to make do a run because you were figuring out the order of operations as you were going. Mm-hmm. So if you had the wrong order of operations, you were doing five at a time, that's five pieces wasted. Well,
and with hand machining, it's not like making 50 of them. It's not like there's efficiencies in making 50 of them versus three. Like once you get the process down, you'll be a little bit faster each time, but you're not going to be an order of magnitude faster each time like you would with casting or something like that.
You know, I lost a lot of time double and triple checking everything.
Yeah.
This is where just basic experience helps you run the disasters off at the pass, where I was really nervous about running into disasters.
So this one's still not functional, right? This is just
actual couplers. So no, these parts aren't mechanically attached. I just JB welded them into there. And then these screws that are on the side are accurate, but they don't do anything on this one. The O-ring also doesn't do anything.
Yeah.
But I have found some anodized auto industry racing connectors that look very similar to the blue anodized Apollo connectors. I know you guys are very excited about that.
Like hose clamps or something? Like
they're like L brackets for a certain type of plumbing thread.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Probably for radiator hose or something
makes sense.
Like to make your inside of your car look as cool as the outside.
That's really cool, Adam.
So this is a red letter day. It's the first time I've ever had a part I machine anodized. It was very exciting.
Very cool.
Is that something you plan on doing in the future just for the hell of it? You get a finish and weather it? Because it's a really cool look.
It is.
If you're machining, like... replica gun parts or...
Or I could even take... It's less expensive than I thought it was. It's not cheap, but it's less expensive than I thought it was. And it occurred to me to take some of the things I've machined to be custom pieces for machines I have, to take those parts out and send them out and have them anodized, and then they're much more durable.
Or, I mean, there are machined pieces on the front of, like, your Fifth Element blaster, the Zorg ZF1,
yes,
right?
Yes. This is true.
That you blued with... With bluing?
Except, no, I blued it with Dycom marking fluid for machinists, but that's how the real one's done.
Oh, okay.
The real one isn't anodized. The real one is done precisely the way I did it.
That makes more sense given that it's a prop, yeah.
Exactly, exactly. Cool. Yeah, so that was my morning.
Hey, Norm, can we talk about the thing that you showed me last week when I was here right before we did the podcast?
Yeah, and I get a chance to talk about that.
look, sometimes these things happen, Adam. It's fine. It's important to be honest with each other. Norm rode in a tiny boat.
One of the best days ever. So Ryan, actually, on our team, had dug up a Facebook video, something that was shared widely, and he's like, you got to check this out. This guy is making a kit to build, build your own boat.
Yeah. And we tried that
I don't know about you, but when you see something have like 50 million views on Facebook, immediate skepticism.
Yeah.
Like, especially on the promises, like all these amazing technologies or like, here's the, what was the one I saw recently?
Here's a cooler with a blender and a chill pad.
Or like a new cassette tape player that's going to bring back analog or something. Like, the things that people typically share are sometimes too good to be true. Many times.
It turns out in this country we might have a problem with people and their understanding of media and their critical analysis of media. Who knew?
My immediate reaction was to be a little dismissive. But we looked it up, and it turns out this guy, Josh, he's local, and then piqued our interest again in Emeryville. He is a product designer, industrial designer, and designed his own single-person boat, a motorized boat.
Like a tiny boat.
A tiny boat. A six-foot-long boat that is all made of parts, 90% made of parts that he laser cut in his own 100-watt laser cutter in his home/shop, or 3D printed.
And you rode in one of his boats.
And they have made three of them now. Yeah. So design one, build them many times. He sells a kit. He sells the designs as well. And he and his buddy and his dad made one, and they brought two of them out, and we took it out to a lake and drove around. And I'll show you some photos. I'll post some photos. You'll see a video, actually, in just a couple of days on the site. We look like children, like grown children on these boats. Like, it's like, you know those power wheels?
Yeah.
One of the power wheels? Yeah. It looks like a power wheel except for a boat.
That sounds great.
And the handling was unbelievable. A motor, like a 4-horsepower motor. Something like 2-horsepower motor.
But it's real. It's
2-horsepower motor.
It's
4 miles per hour.
Motor. Not
electric.
A gas.
Yeah. Electric.
Literally, they put a 12-volt car battery.
Yep.
As a ballast.
As ballast, sure.
As ballast as well. Yeah. Two of them, one for extra ballast, right? And the way he designed it, I didn't realize, and I have no CAD experience. We're talking about designing and in the computer, but he did all his calculations on where on tipping points and center of balance and everything, all digitally. The coolest thing was how the thing came together. When you and I Will tried to build a model boat, we reached a point where we had to take these plywood sheets and steam them around a jig, right?
Yeah, and that's when we were like, well, this has been fun.
Yeah.
We're going to move on and do something else now.
We do not have necessarily the expertise. And how would you do that for a big boat? His is all done with a method called stitch and glue, zip-tied pieces together, and then epoxied the hinges, and it formed, there's no jig, it's the shell of the boat, the hull.
There's holes.
There's ribs.
Yep.
And there's holes that line up with the ribs and the and the outer pieces.
Yep. And they are all zip-tied, and that perfectly bends the boat, the plywood, against each other.
So do they have to soak the plywood or anything?
No.
This hurts my brain. It's really cool.
Yeah, there's marine-grade ply, apparently.
Marine-grade ply is great.
Is it bendy like the wobbly wood?
It is, but it's got more plies than average plywood, so it is much bendier and can take a lot more stress.
And the grain, there's no, like, there are no knots
voids.
In it.
There's no voids.
And knots, yeah.
Okay.
When you laser-cut plywood, cheap plywood will have voids sometimes between, and those can assist your laser cutter in burning your house down because you can get hot gases in there and then a little fire will shoot out. That's why at Industrial Light and Magic, it was required that you only use marine grade ply for plywood cutting.
Well, that's
interesting. The ingenuity of designing something so that it could be made with the tools he had on hand, in this case, cutting quarter-inch ply and 3D printing parts the volume about the size of that bottle, right?
Yep.
At most. No machining, right? No metal parts.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the fact that he could prototype by having everything down, so you know, his boat's made out of quarter-inch ply, but then he could take eighth-inch ply and make a half-scale version of his boat. And where the holes are perfect because the zip ties, you can find half-size zip ties as well.
Mm-hmm.
And so everything could be prototyped.
So were they using like those big fat half-inch zip ties or just normal small
ones? And
they're
laser cutting these tiny little slits. Yep. First, wow.
Perfect. And so then they putty that up when it's done. Wow. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Man, that's super smart.
I want to build a half-size one.
Like it's way easier to make use zip ties.
Yeah.
Oh, a Ripley boat. RC Ripley boat. Yeah. You could. I bet Jeremy would do your.
That was my impression of Ripley trying to lick anything.
My dog.
That's my Ripley sleeping impression.
So look forward to that video as well.
That's really funny.
Ton of fun.
Hey, speaking of Black Panther, which we're not gonna talk about.
Somebody didn't see it, and it wasn't me for once.
I'm a total asshole. I haven't seen it.
Spoilers.
It's okay. You can contribute to the second weekend gross.
Yeah,
and so I shall.
You know, I'm gonna go and tell you, spoilers aren't gonna detract from your enjoyment of that film. So you know, if you want, we can just drop everything right now.
Nope, don't want to hear anything. I haven't even seen a trailer for it. Wow. This is one of the first times I've been that good.
You saw Civil War though?
I did.
So the character made its first appearance in the MCU.
I watched Civil War recently, actually.
Oh, great. And would you agree that the character stole much of the show?
He's wonderful. Yeah. Civil War, all the ancillary characters. Tom Holland is amazing.
Spider-Man and Black Panther, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, terrific. Yeah. It's great. I mean...
You know, there's a scene in Civil War where T'Challa, the Black Panther, you know, he's the Prince of Wakanda. He's walking to his car with an entourage of his bodyguards. These women with shaved heads. And
Scarlett Johansson, Black Widow.
Black Widow, that's right. Scarlett Johansson is blocking them, and he says something like, "As much as I would love to see this play out, today's not the time." And you get the sense of, like, these are badass.
Right.
The whole movie is like that.
Delivers.
Okay, that's awesome.
It delivers
the promise of that scene.
What I wanted to point out was that I found there was a story that was making the rounds yesterday of Michael B. Jordan going to a sneaker shop in L.A. and going sneaker shopping
in New York.
Okay,
let's say Complex.
He goes to Complex in New York and he goes sneaker shopping, and I saw out of the corner of my eye in the thumbnail something that looked familiar, and sure enough, I was right. He buys a pair of Tom Sachs's Mars Yard shoes.
Oh my God.
Cut to him wearing them on the red carpet.
Oh my God, that's one less pair of those in the world. God.
And then, of course, it flashed up. Tom Sachs, Nike X, Mars Yard shoes, $200. What?
No,
that's the retail price.
When they had originally put them on sale.
Sweet,
if you were a
merciful
lucky
Jesus
person
I was
to
gonna,
enter
I
a
was,
raffle
oh.
or go through the space camp.
Yes.
Yeah.
I got a kick out of that.
Of those kicks.
Those are good kicks. Those are the best kicks.
Right. What else is there to talk about? I've been watching some television, and I watched the reboot of Queer Eye for the Straight Guy.
Okay.
I watched three episodes.
It's still just the same premise.
What's that?
It's just Queer Eye because it can be for anyone.
Oh.
Is it still the same premise though? Like people with good taste come in and fashion you up?
It is. Yes. It is that. And
okay.
The Fab Five, as they call themselves,
yes.
are an excellent new mix of a large swath of diverse talents and specialties and personalities. And they're great. I've watched episodes 1, 2, and 3. Episode 3 involves a Trump voting cop.
Great.
Right? I mean, it's kind of intense.
So what is
and he's really great. Episode 2 is a guy who's very shut off. But episode 1, the pilot, or I guess you'd call it the pilot. There's no pilots anymore. I guess it's just
Look,
episode
you just ordered
one.
13 episodes. And you
yeah. Unless
it season.
You're on Amazon, because they do a whole pilot
this
season.
This is Netflix.
Yeah.
So episode 1 is with this old Kentucky guy named Tom. Big beard, rosacea, you know, trying to get himself out of a rut.
Yeah.
This seems to be the theme. And Tom is so open to everything that it is very moving to watch the episode.
It's funny hearing that, because like the first time they did this, which was what, probably 15 years ago now, 10, 15 years ago, it was very much a, like, here's coastal people, and then here's rubes in the middle of the country. And it wasn't, like it wasn't poking fun, but it could have been very easily.
Well, just the premise, right?
Yeah.
The name Queer Eye for the Straight Guy
was controversial.
The premise takes advantage of preconceptions you have.
Right.
Yeah.
But the show isn't leaning into those.
It's, well, but the original one did. I mean, Carson leaned way into all the stereotypes that any Midwestern rube might have about gay people and played them way up. And not to say that this show seems like, I was thinking, telling my wife, I was like, wow, I bet the producer has a checklist of like every transition needs someone going, here we go. You know, some crazy, fey, specific.
Yeah.
Forgive me for that. I made that impression.
To illustrate the point.
Illustrate a point. But they are not just talking about the look. They're talking about the life. They're talking about the health. They're talking about the food. And they're talking about the rut. And they get into some really genuinely sophisticated psychological stuff. And the stuff they get to with each of these people is really impressive.
Do they actually have a psychologist or psychiatrist this go around?
They don't.
Like, that was the thing. I didn't watch very much of the first pass. But my feeling on a lot of those shows where they're breaking people down and then building them back up again. Because that's essentially what the first one was, at least.
This is a little less breaking. Well, they also begin the very first episode saying, last time it was about tolerance, this time it's about acceptance. Oh. And that is actually a really lovely, like, flag in the ground of clearly what was their producing rubric.
Yeah.
And about where it really goes. And it's when they say acceptance, what they really mean is self-acceptance. Of course, what these people are looking for is a way to kind of get out of a rut that has shielded them from the world or pushed away part of the world that they would like to bring to them. But really, that's what most of the discussions are about self-acceptance and realizing. And
you're talking about the subject that they...
Yeah,
that they're working
the,
on
the person
right?
they're yeah, working yeah, on, yeah. And they get into the real weeds with it. So anyway, I really enjoyed the spit out of this reboot, and I didn't think I would.
So I've watched most of the first season of The Good Place now.
Mm. Oh yes! Wow, within a week, well done.
Goes once you get it going, it goes real fast.
They're little nuggets. They're they are 23 minutes.
That. Knowing the big spoiler, we're not going to spoil it again, but if you didn't listen to the back half of last week because you didn't want to spoil the show, you're probably okay. Like, I can safely say, I think that I'm really enjoying watching this show, knowing what's coming.
It's a spoiler. Because they did spoiler proof.
They did a phenomenal job with foreshadowing.
Right.
Like the thing that I had picked up on last week, I was off by one, basically. Right. Like I knew something was up, but I took the wrong fork in the path. And it's very good.
I'm so glad you're enjoying it. Season two gets very hairy and weird and wonderful.
I was going to go see on Sunday Early Man.
Oh, yeah.
And because Gina wants to see I, Tonya, and it's only in theaters. Oh. We watched, we're in the pre-Oscar ramp up time. So we watched Three Billboards.
I might have a screener. I'll text you later.
Ooh. Three Billboards outside Ebbing, Missouri.
Am I allowed to say that?
I don't know what the rules are on that. You're the special here.
Someone in a room just went like this. Oh,
Savage is on his bullshit again. It's three billboards. If it's on demand, I think, and in theaters, mm-hmm. That movie absolutely wrecked me in a really, like, I thoroughly enjoyed it.
Okay.
Frances McDormand and Woody Harrelson are both as amazing as you've ever seen them before.
Like I said, I've gotten to a specific point in that movie that upset me, and I needed to stop watching it at that moment, and we haven't gone back, but I will.
It's very upsetting, but I think that the it earns, without spoiling it all, it earns where it ends up in a way that I was blown away by.
Boy, it's going to have to work hard.
Yeah.
You know, completely unrelated, but spoiler related. We do talk about spoilers a lot in the show, and something we've started doing on our other podcasts is put LED lights in the back that we can change the colors.
So
we turn on red alert for spoiler talk so people watching the video can scrub.
That's we can just make a spoiler sign.
And just put it up.
And that is a one-day build, and on air, but this one will be spoiler.
And for audio,
light up.
I like it.
And for audio, we'll just play a buzzing sound when spoilers are on. It's just like
the whole time
at the feast underneath the talking.
No.
Yeah, that's good.
That's great.
Yeah, four channel audio.
Yeah. Three billboards.
Highly recommended.
Highly recommended. I'm excited to see Itanya. I mean, Early Man. Gina, go see Itanya. I need nothing more of that.
A couple of the directors that we met and spent time with in England at Aardman came by the shop last week because they were here doing part of that promotion. It was lovely to see them and spend some time with those guys. Cool. What else is there to talk about?
Oh my gosh. I do also want to reiterate my affection for the show The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel.
Comedian, the 50s comedian.
Yes, it is it's 50s not like Mad Men at all.
Yeah.
Even though they inhabit the same New York world. Production design is beautiful. The costumes are beautiful. The apartments they live in are amazing. And the lead actress, Rachel Brosnahan, who is in House of Cards as Rachel, is it? I think. Oh. She is she's wonderful.
I have also been listening to a lot of podcasts. I mentioned Pod Save America, haven't I? I've listened to a whole bunch of that. I'm pretty religiously listening to Love It or Leave It.
It's all under the Crooked Media brand.
And I've been listening to the New York Times The Daily.
Oh.
Which is
Daily Pod, it's like a news wrap up. That's what I've wanted for a long time.
Every morning, it's really wonderful. And the guy who hosts it, whose name right now escapes me, I didn't do my research before the podcast, I'm sorry. He's terrific.
How long is it?
It's like 20 to 40 minutes.
As long as it needs to be.
Yeah, but not that long. It's like 30 minutes is about the sweet spot. And it's a nugget of just like, here's the basic gist of what you need to know. And here's an interview with someone going deeper into one aspect of what happened.
I mean, honestly, what I kind of want is like a Kai Rizdahl show that's there. When I wake up in the morning, instead of like when I'm on my home from work.
Yeah. I love my favorite voices, Kai Rizdahl, Brooke Gladstone, Bob Garfield, Nina Totenberg.
Yeah.
Okay. Nina Totenberg. Because she's always talking about the Supreme Court. So I've got this huge legal crush on Nina Totenberg.
Yeah, okay.
In fact, that was actually that was a mission that I concocted when I went to the White House Press Correspondents Dinner in 2012, I think. is that I tried to find Nina Totenberg, but I couldn't. Those are my favorite voices on NPR.
I was gonna say my daughter got tired of listening to music in the car, and she was like, "Can we listen to some of the stuff that you like to listen? Can we listen to podcasts, Dad?"
Wow!
So I've been delving into the whole world of podcasts for kids.
Did you make her listen to S Town?
we went straight to S Town, and then
I got a real little dick, so I just slid it over the sink.
So.
Spoiler alert.
That's not a spoiler. I'm quoting a line from S-Town.
Oh my god. So after S-Town, Science Friday does a kids show that's really good. I don't remember the name of it. But the thing that she really hooked onto is like a episodic serialized show that's done by WHYY, which is where Terry Fresh Gross, Air, yeah. Terry Gross, and like
from
that.
WHYY in Philadelphia.
Exactly.
Yeah.
They do a show called Eleanor Amplified that's like a serialized radio drama about a NPR reporter named Eleanor Amplified who has a bunch of adventures, and it is eminently tolerable for adults when you're in the car.
That's really good to
and
know.
And she was like, we got to the end of two seasons and it ran out of episodes. She was like, can we start again at the beginning, Dad?
Wow.
So yeah, mad props to Eleanor Amplified because that show is okay.
Yeah.
And they do like full Foley work and everything. So it's and fully voice acted. So it's bonkers. It's really, really funny.
Wait, there was something else I was going to mention.
Podcast wise.
No.
Book?
Movie.
I don't know.
I started reading Neuromancer. It's astounding. Like do you want me to spoil the one thing that William Gibson completely missed?
Yeah.
Cell phones.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
I mean, famously. Other than that, like it's prescient, right? The book is
every bit of it is
there or 5 years from now.
Amazing.
Yeah.
I can't wait to jump in. I'm still reading The Silk Roads, a new book about the history of the world through the Silk Roads, which is completely riveting. I just finished Mary Beard's SPQR, kind of a overall history of Rome from about 600 BC to 200 AD.
Okay, so like the time when the Roman Empire was the prime force in the world,
right?
And after then, the Greeks had fallen,
and it's quite amazing. Just briefly, when you look at history at that point, it's like after Rome falls, and as it slowly moves to Constantinople, Constantine moves the capital, and then they slowly get ground to dust over the next couple of centuries.
Yeah,
and at that point, Western trade just disappears. Like, there are no more vessels full of amphora of olive oil from Spain. There are no more, you know, it just stops. And so that was still happening, though. It just was no longer happening in Europe and on the northeastern side of the Mediterranean. It was all happening on the southern and western side, eastern side of the Mediterranean, in the Fertile Crescent and Persia and all of that, like, tremendous advances in, like, complex financial instruments being developed and huge family networks developing these trade routes thousands of miles long, bringing silks and, I mean, coins deep into India and China and all the way as far as Spain. And it's really incredible to read what we consider the what Western white people consider the Dark Ages was only dark for for Western Europe.
For, yeah, England to right. Italy, basically, yeah.
Yeah, it was fascinating. So it's a riveting look at what was going on in the world.
That's SPQR?
No, well, no, that was SPQR. That was the History of Rome. This one's called Silk Road. Silk Road,
okay. Wow. Very cool.
Yeah, really, really enjoyable.
Awesome. That's it. This week on Netflix, Duncan Jones' new film got picked up by Netflix. Mute.
Ooh, really?
So I'm looking forward to
what's
that.
What's it called?
That's on Netflix?
Mute. Yeah. Mute. Oh. Mute.
Yeah.
Is this in the same world as
Moon? Could be. We don't know.
Wait, are all of his films in the same world?
No, I don't know. Warcraft.
Well, okay, except for Warcraft.
I don't think Source Code is in the
Source
same world.
Source Code either. Is just a one train ride away, right?
That was a good movie.
Source Code
was great.
It's very rewatchable.
Is it?
Yeah, I went back and I bought it in the bargain bin on Blu-ray at some point and was like, I'm going to rewatch this. And I rewatched it. It was terrific.
I remember thinking, this will be tolerable, and finishing it going, that was excellent.
Yeah, I would watch. I mean, yeah, I'll watch his movies
Elizabeth
anytime.
Banks?
No,
it's
Michelle Monaghan.
Michelle Monaghan, right, yeah. right.
Also coming back in Mission Impossible Fallout.
I haven't watched that trailer either.
It's before Black Panther.
Let me tell you this. You don't have to watch the trailer because you know you're going to watch the movie anyway. Yeah. Especially if you like the last one.
I did like the last one.
And
yeah.
It's a lot of the recurring stars.
Chris McQuarrie came back.
Came back to direct it.
This is the first time they've had a recurring director.
He wrote it and came back. It is the culmination. It may be the last one. I would say one reason to watch the trailer, though, is Tom Cruise broke his ankle on a stunt.
And they showed that
and that
specific
is
take?
The take they use in the trailer.
Whoa! Wow, really?
Yes. And you can see, if you freeze frame it, it looks painful.
Is it the thing where he's dangling?
No, it's a jumping scene, and he hits the wall with his foot.
Ow.
From one building to another.
Wow.
Yeah.
I like, how many times can the government of the United States of America screw over Tom Cruise? That's really the question we should be asking ourselves.
You guys got real deep.
I've also been doing a lot of work this week on Savage merchandising, the EDC bag, and future products. And so I just watched this space because we're going to be announcing some new stuff in the next few weeks.
Cool.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Awesome. Great stuff, you as usual, on the site. The boat video, the mini boat video.
I can't wait.
This week.
That's
It's an incredibly large Norm in a very small boat.
smiles. So many smiles everywhere. And we have our last few videos from Aardman Animation.
Yay! So much fun to go there.
Please check those out. And I guess that's it.
Now we got to wait like 3 or so years before we go back to Aardman and see the same cool stuff for the next movie.
I just can't imagine working on anything over that kind of a timeline. Like spending 3 years. I mean, it's the same thing at all the stop motion houses. Like,
well, I mean,
Leica
I was
is the same,
Leon
I'm sure.
Critch after Coco. It's like, what are you going to do next? And he's like, I have no idea.
He's going to Disneyland, Adam. Yeah. That's what he does after. I mean, what do you do after you've worked on something for 3 or 4 years?
I think you freak out a little bit, you know? Yeah. Your life has radically changed because you slept and breathed this thing for so long. And then it goes out into the world, and hopefully you enjoy some success from that. But yeah, I think, you know, I think it's a modified version of what you go through with any, like, big life change, except as an animation director like that, you go through that with every movie.
I mean, one of the things, game developers are kind of on the same time frame a lot of times because they're anywhere from, like, 18 months to 4 or 5 years sometimes. And usually when you ask them what they want to get out of the thing that they're making right then, they tell you, they say, look, we just want to sell enough of these that we get to do this again.
Right.
Right. We want to sell enough copies of this game that we can keep doing this, and that this is that we don't have to go get straight jobs someplace else.
6 months. That is a good length of project time to wrap it up and not get lost in it and still feel a sense of accomplishment. Completely arbitrary.
I don't disagree.
I'm going to say 6 months.
I don't disagree. And also, we're totally screwing up people's pacing of what they think the end of the podcast is going to be. Like, they pulled into their driveway thinking, oh, well, they're wrapping it up, so I'll just pause here. And now we're just continuing to talk.
Yeah. So that Diet Snapple, huh? It's pretty good. Got that lemon tea flavor.
Oh, man. Have we talked about all the different flavors of ginger beer Bundaberg makes in Australia?
What? Really?
I have
a picture of Norm took of a grocery store wall of like 15 different flavors.
It's like LaCroix?
They have a lemon lime with bitters. Bundaberg ginger beer.
You've been talking about the thing that changed your life, the zero Asahi
Zero. Okay, Asahi, apparently it's the number one NA beer in Japan. Asahi, makers of one of my favorite beers back when I was a person who drank, makes a zero alcohol, zero calorie beer called Asahi Zero.
What is it, just water with some
yeast
in
there? It is genuinely delicious.
Wow.
I'm totally... Look, I would love for... some American importers to start giving me choices other than Klaus Thaler. Yeah.
Wow, that is bonkers.
No, it is.
That is so many ginger beers.
I know. You should put that at the Italian podcast. And Asahi Zero, man, if you know where I can get it in San Francisco, please let me know, because I have one of my people looking for it, and we're not having any luck.
Well, you know, one of the things I realized is that people don't sell birch beer on the West Coast.
Oh,
that's a thing that I always had when I was a kid growing up, because you got it in like DC. It's like a little spicier root beer, right? Like it's got a little
like
more
sarsaparilla
nutmeg.
Is one branch of root beer, and birch beer is another branch.
Yeah, birch beer is more root beery, and sarsaparilla is more, I don't know, it's brighter is what I would describe. But nobody makes birch beer that I've been able to find on the West Coast at all. Huh. And I've been to the point of like going to the Amazon marketplace stores that sell stuff. I assume that they get in the grocery store in Maryland and pack it up in a UPS box and we'll ship it out here. Anyway.
On that note.
You got anything else?
You can exit your cars now and go home to your families and kiss your children.
Enjoy your days, everybody.
Go watch Black Panther.
Can't wait.
Okay.
Bye.
Bye, guys.
Next week, guys.